Debtor Society, Credit Card Nation. In jeopardizing the Commonweal, through teenagers bearing credit cards, financiers leading politicians on golden leashes, and the Republic drowning in debt, the new economy mocks the dicta and beliefs of the nation's founding fathers. We can only wonder which one would have been most appalled. George Washington, who in the early 1770s decried London creditors for their treatment of Virginians, Benjamin Franklin, who deplored debt, John Adams, who publicly loathed banks, or Thomas Jefferson, who feared the rise of a financial elite. Lincoln, who put labor ahead of capital, would have been equally displeased, and likewise the two Roosevelts, Theodore and Franklin. Even the lessons of Greece and Rome were relevant, as the men deliberating in 1787 had known from their readings. For leading world economic powers of more recent vintage, the ins and outs and ups and downs of debt have been high-stakes rites of passage. If world history can be examined through the experience and saga of sugar, coal, spices, codfish, or technology, as bookshelves testify, debt also provides an important lens. One such volume, A Free Nation Deep in Debt, The Financial Roots of Democracy, recently came from a British investment banker, James McDonald. After explaining the role of debt, principally over the last 500 years, McDonald concluded that the rise of a massive, impersonal, and electronic global marketplace, public and private debt had all but dissolved the old nexus between citizen creditors and democratic government. The emergence within the United States of the world's first large-scale debt and credit complex, analysis of which McDonald did not pursue, may tell an even sadder tale. A detailed chronicle of U.S. debt travails, looking back from 2015 or 2020, may rank the early 2000s as crisis years surpassing the 1890s, 1931 to 1933, and the early 1980s. During 2003, household debt jumped 11%, and 28% of Americans ended the year by giving debt priority in their New Year's resolutions, according to a poll by the Cambridge Consumer Index. Amelia Warren Tyagi, co-author of The Two-Income Trap, Why Middle-Class Mothers and Fathers Are Going Broke, told reporters that nearly one-third of bankruptcy filers owed an entire year's salary on their credit cards. During 2004, one unlucky American filed for bankruptcy every 15 seconds. Antoinette Millard of Manhattan, after running up bills of nearly $1 million in local luxury emporiums, sued American Express for improperly soliciting her to sign up for a big spender's credit card. By year's end, consumer debt represented a record 85.7% of GDP. Overall, the U.S. economy had added $2.7 trillion in debt in 12 months. 2005, in turn, saw the household debt service ratio reach 13.4% of after-tax income, the highest level since the Fed began publishing that data in 1980. In California, interest-only loans accounted for 60% of new mortgages, up from 47% in 2004. Multiple causes were at work. Human nature provided the greed and gullibility at which three decades of determined federal regulatory dismantling had unleashed credit vendors. U.S. financial overseers, in turn, were disinclined to establish social criteria or community welfare yardsticks for economic policies or activities. Finance also indulged one of its periodic compulsions to combine avarice, legal nonchalance, and clever innovation in the new speculative instruments. Another sequence of the high-wire acts and bubble-blowing kits so recurrent in the four-century history of financial manias, panics, and crashes. How the U.S. federal government became willing to dismiss memories of the 1920s and start deregulating banking and finance in the 1970s and 1980s makes a logical entry point for risk assessment. The stripping away at old safeguards in the name of the marketplace was relentless. Consider these post-1970 policy milestones, some taken from the Financial Services Handbook, but others added from explanations of relevant court rulings and Federal Reserve Board decisions. In 1971, Washington stopped letting foreign central banks exchange their dollars for gold, thereby creating a buildup of excess U.S. currency in Europe, the advent of eurodollars. This supercharged the foreign exchange markets. In 1974, the U.S. government convinced Saudi Arabia and OPEC to price oil in dollars, which to some extent put the U.S. dollar on an oil standard. Many so-called petrodollars received in oil payments were invested through U.S. banks, recycling some of the benefits of higher oil prices.